Kevin Foster, side four. Kevin Foster, side four. So tell me what happened then. There are these booby traps all over the place.
Yeah, they had booby traps all over the place. They had minefields laid out. Now, what they were doing was getting the Argentinian prisoners to go around and clear the minefields themselves in the Port Stanley area. There was also warehouses full of Argentinian supplies. They'd been booby-trapped. Now, during this time, there was a big warehouse in Port Stanley, and we'd been chatting with some people from the SIGS regiment, a couple of staff sergeants. There was a major there, and they were living in an old garage, luckily in Essenhut, and that's where they actually built it in Port Stanley. And we've been in the bar one night chatting with them, and they invited us back to their place. And it was a curfew for the soldiers after 9:30. They had to be in bed by 9:30. But drunken mutlers weren't included in all this. We were allowed to walk around and do what we wanted. So we went up to this garage and was there with the major. And he's chatting. He's saying, what's your name, lads? We told him. And he says, do you want to drink, lads? We says, oh, yes, sir. And he goes, no, the name's John. Just sort of these youngsters. And he had crates and crates of whiskey. They had packets of fags all stacked up, crates of beer. And we says, where did you get this from? And they says, oh, well, it's part of rations. And I thought, like my tail. And then one of the staff sergeants, he says, what are you doing tomorrow? And I says, not a great deal. He says, do you fancy having a look for some Argentinian goods?
Wait, what? Argentinian goods.
Yeah, so I says, fair enough, I'll do it. So me and him snuck out one night, went into this warehouse. He broke the padlock off, and we had a good old mooch around, throwing things around to see if we could find anything worth having. And we ended up getting a couple of rifles. We left there, and the following day it was in the news, a couple of Gurkhas had been blown up, breaking into a warehouse, and it was the exact same one that we'd been in the night before. Yet we never seen nothing. Mm. So they obviously looked in the wrong places.
What about, this was how many days after the surrender?
Oh, this would have been about a week, 2 weeks.
Okay. Immediately at the surrender, what was the civil population doing?
Getting drunk.
Right.
After the surrender, you'd go to a bar and it'd be packed out with the civvies, the locals. So they're all ugly, even the women.
They're all?
All ugly women. There was no decent one amongst them. So the bar would be packed out every night with these civvies. And they're all skinned. They had no money. So they'd be scrounging off the soldiers and whatever to buy them drinks. And but a lot of them were all well cheerful and quite happy that the British troops were there.
And what had happened? The Argentinians were all at the other. They're all in a pen, were they? Or what?
No, the Argentinians were actually living on the ships. On the one of the ships was the St Edmunds. It was a British rail ship. Now we used to take the troops from Port Stanley over to the St Edmunds so that you get a shower. And you had quite a few Argentinian prisoners on there. Now, we went alongside one day on this patrol boat, and the stoker on our ship was called Jody Crowther. And as we come alongside the St Edmunds, looking at one of the porthole windows was General Menendez, the general in charge of the Argy forces down there. So George Crowther was saying, quick, I want a photograph of him in the background. So I was jumping up on the deck on the Tiger Bay, pulling faces and throwing things at the porthole until he looked around. And when he looked around, George Crowther thought, and got a photograph, and then he disappeared, so we never seen him again after that. But he didn't look too impressed. He looked pretty miserable, to say the least.
Did you speak to any of the Argies?
No, we didn't. No. We went alongside the Uganda, because we used to go down to the big ships and say, we'll take your rubbish out to sea for you, and ditch it out the outer harbour. But it'll cost you a couple of crates to do it. Now, the Uganda was a hospital ship, and one of the bags of rubbish we got from them was all the amputated limbs.
Nice.
That we had to take out, because they threw it down from a hell of a height, and I jumped out the way at the last second, and it bust open, and that's what spilled out.
Deliberate, wasn't it?
No, I don't think you did it deliberately, but it was just a paper bag, a big bin liner, or a burn bag type thing, that he had it in.
And it was, describe that.
It was, well, as soon as it hit the deck, we jumped out the way, because this thing was gathering speed coming down, we didn't know where it was, and when it spilled open, you had the first thing that came out was a hand rolled out, and then there was a couple of arms and legs, and we was nearly sick. So we just sort of got a shovel, dustpan type thing, and scooped them into another bag, a black plastic bag, knotted it all up. And then we took it out of harbour, and then we slung it over the side out there. But we was even offered the chance of having an RG prisoner to work with on the patrol boat. And we says, no, we don't need them. Quite happy doing the job ourselves.
Did that, I mean, I'm not being funny, but did that must have put you off for several days.
Oh, it was disgusting. It was a horrible sight.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was the first real look at the parts of dead bodies I've ever seen.
Yeah. And just on this, what were you dressed in? Were you in combat kit? Or
no, we had a mixture in the Navy. I used to wear a pair of Wellingtons with a pair of white sea socks turned down over the top, blue overalls, a blue full weather jacket, and a blue woolly hat. Mm. And that was my kit.
Were you armed individually?
Nope.
No.
Just the weapons that were picked up on the street.
What was the actual attitude of the RG prisoners that you took in for showers and so forth?
We didn't actually have nothing to do with them. That was the army who did all that.
Right. What did they look like? Well,
we went on board the St. Edmunds to get a meal one afternoon, and there was RGs everywhere. And he had different regiment, like the Scots Guards or the Welsh Guards would be escorting these prisoners with SMGs. And we was chatting to him what they're like. And I was talking to one Scots Guards, and he says, oh, they're quite cheerful now that it's all over and done with. Because a lot of them didn't want to do it in the first place.
Okay. Right. What was the... hadn't they vandalised various places in Portsmouth?
Yeah, they'd vandalised the public toilets there. The post office was smashed up. The school was smashed up. The town hall was smashed up.
Mm.
But the actual toilets, they'd got tin cans and things and rammed them down inside.
Yeah.
So they couldn't be used again. But when the army got there, they made them clear them back out anyway.
And I thought they shitted out the West stores, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So there we are. When did you finish there then?
We sailed from there in the beginning of July.
So you ditched the boat, did you?
No, the Cardiff sailed before we did.
Right.
We was met. There was talk about us staying down there for 18 months on the Tiger Bay. And
how did you feel about that?
We wasn't too impressed. 18 months. But then our captain said, "Well, you because it wasn't him. It was somebody down there wanted to be kept down there." Our captain said, "Right, how are they going to be paid? Who's going to supply the rations, kit, etc.? How are they going to do all this?" And then,
what were your other duties? Because you had taken people from all these offshore stations or whatever it was, presumably by that.
Yeah, by this time it was mainly taxi service, taking people out of ships,
right,
or doing the old garbage run, as we called it.
Right.
And that was just something we did ourselves, just to get a few crates off the other ships. Because we weren't doing a great deal.
Who did you deal with on the civilian side?
We didn't deal with anybody.
Right.
We went anything wanted to run through the army.
Right. Okay. So when you left in July?
We left in the beginning of July. The Cardiff had actually sailed headed north. The crew from the Yahoo and the Black Pig, they'd already left. They left about 3 or 4 days before we did, because the Fearless went back north.
What happened to these two vessels then?
Well, the Yuhun had a bomb inside of it.
A bomb?
Yeah, in the engine room. It was a naval lieutenant. He had his fiddle with him. And he actually defused the bomb. I actually chatted with this lieutenant in Port Stanley. Everywhere he went, he took his fiddle with him. He's playing in the bars. And the day the crew off the Black Pig were going back up, up north, to the Fearless, the Black Pig did a tour of the harbour. With his geezer on board with his fiddle, and on the broadcast they were playing the tune to the Black Pig, Captain Pugwash, as they were belting around everywhere. And they also got a bollocking because they had flags all down the yardarm, and the flags spelt out "Rumpf," which means "roll on my effing time" in naval terminology. Yeah. And this is what they're flying from the mast, so they got a near bending for that one, and plus the racket they were making from the bloke with his fiddle.
So what happened to the ship then?
Well, the Yuhun was towed away, and I think they sunk that one.
Right.
And the Tiger Bay, we left it, and a crew off another ship took over from us. And then we headed back up north.
You don't know what happened to the boat?
Yeah, well, what had happened was that we went down there patrol again in 83, 4 months. And by this time, it had been painted completely grey. The cam colour had gone off it. It was painted grey, like, because the Navy had got its hands on it. And then in September 1983, I was walking through Portsmouth Dockyard, and the Tiger Bay was in one of the locks. The Navy were flogging it. They brought it back up on another ship.
Hmm.
Brought it the 8,000 miles, and the Navy were selling it off to whoever wanted it.
Right. Was there much kit taken away do you know, that you saw that was unusual? Let's put it that way.
Well, how do you mean by kit?
Stuff that was equally sold off officially.
Oh, there must have been a fair bit, yeah. I mean, on the Argy Patrol boat, we had a Gemini inflatable with the outboard engine. And I sold that myself, personally, to a chief petty officer who was on the St. Edmunds.
All right.
And we'd put a sign on that. We'd got it on the jetty, we'd put a sign there. And I remember, because there's a lot of paras at the end of the jetty, waiting for a boat to take them for a shower. And we had this thing on the jetty, and we had a brown pair, a big brown bag, saying, for sale, one deluxe Argy Gemini. It crates of beer and two bottles of whiskey on your offer. Then this boat came
How much is that worth? That's worth about what?
Well, the crate of beer was about £27 at the time. Or the boat itself was worth about a few hundred quid.
Yeah, sure.
Plus the engine as well that we'd got.
Yeah.
And this boat came in from the St. Edmunds. It was one of the lifeboats that they were using as a ferrying service. And they seen the bag and they says, is that thing genuine, that offer? And I says, yeah. And they says, right, we'll give you four crates of beer. I says, crates of beer and two bottles of whiskey. And then this haggling went on between me and this chief. And they was only going up to get some stores from somewhere. I think it was from the West Fulton stores or the co-op. And then we eventually settled for four crates of beer and a bottle of whiskey. And that was the price agreed on. So I got these paras. I says, give us a hand to get this in the water, lads. And they said, well, do we just load it? I says, no, I'll just sling it off the end of it. It sinks, it's no problem, I've sold it now. So they come back with the beer. And I had the whiskey. And by this time, Muddy Waters, the lieutenant in charge, he was the skipper of the Tiger Bay, he said, where's the Gemini gone? I says, oh, flogged it to. He says, what do you get for it? I says, four crates of beer and a bottle of whiskey. In fact, the four crates of beer was worth about £28 for the four crates of beer.
Yeah.
And a bottle of whiskey, whatever it was worth.
Yeah.
He says, well, that's not very good, is it? I says, it's better than out. So he actually went up with this chief and had a chat with him. So the next thing, we're all on the Tiger Bay, heading off towards St. Edmunds, and Muddy Waters had wrangled with £30 a piece loan from the St. Edmunds, and they would then send the bill across to Cardiff, and our chief pay officer would send the money back. It was like an advance payment from our wages. He got a £30 pay advance each from a civilian ship.
Okay, so you got back. How did you get back to England? We finished off your naval service, yeah.
Cardiff had actually sailed. Then when they decided that they couldn't, there was nobody to give us rations on this, we was told to rejoin the ship. Mm. So we went up the race course at Port Stanley, and then a Sea King helicopter from HMS Invincible flew out, picked us up, and then flew us north, and load went onto the flight deck of the Cardiff.
Right.
And we rejoined the Cardiff back out at sea.
Okay, then you landed?
Got on board the ship. See, the Sea King couldn't land because of the size of it, so we had to be winched down onto the deck.
Right.
And then by then it was the largest sun defence stations, but as we got further north out the total exclusion zone, then it just completely relaxed.
What was the atmosphere on the boat going back?
Oh, cheerful.
Cheerful. And had there been any casualties on the ship at all?
None at all on the Cardiff.
No,
none at all.
When did you arrive back in England?
27th of July.
Right. Was that when the big celebration? Was when the liners came back?
Oh, the Hermes and the
QE2 or whatever.
Yeah, they all got back long before we did. Right. They did.
Okay, so what did you landed and then what happened? You got leave?
Or? We got shown Portsmouth. I was duty the first day.
Oh.
But they actually had blokes who volunteered to stay behind as a retired leave party. And even with them, they still kept me on board as duty.
Why?
I don't know. There was a few who got told was duty that day.
Mm.
Then the next morning, the ship did a cold move from one jetty to another one. Like, tugboats towed it round there. And then they said to me, right, you're staying on board until the ship's moving. I says, I'm not. I says, my duty was from 8 o'clock yesterday morning to late in the day. I'm going to leave. So you can do the move by yourself. And I refused plumb blank to do the cold move. Grabbed me bag and headed off out.
And then what?
Well, actually, I had a Belgian fall rifle with us as well. But I was told I wouldn't get out the dockyard gate because the security was that bad.
Mm.
So I slung it over the side in Portsmouth Harbour. It's probably at the bottom of Portsmouth Harbour now.
Really?
Belgian fan, and there's four magazines of 7.62 with it as well. And then
you could have got it out?
Well, they had a collapsible stock. And as I was coming through the gates, the dockyard police were there. I had two bags, one with my naval cap on the outside of one bag, and an Argy helmet on the other bag. And the copper says, just come off the Falklands, mate. And I says, yeah. He says, get yourself through. Didn't even check us.
Really?
And I could have folded up perfectly inside of one of my bags, and I would have got through the lot.
Yeah.
But somebody told us it was that bad security, so I slung it over the side, pumped me over. What a shame.
So, then you went, how long were you on leave for?
I was on leave for about a month then.
Right.
Rejoined the ship, was in refit.
Right.
Then we didn't do a great deal, went to drainage for the, oh, what is it, the big NATO meeting. You get all your generals and things from all over the world, from NATO.
All right.
And 1982, it was at drainage.
Yep. How long were you there?
We was there for about a week.
Okay. And anything?
Nothing. I took part, I did the Navy Boxing Championships.
Really?
Yeah, got through the semi-finals. Then the we went to refit again. 83, we went down to the Falklands again on patrol for 4 months.
This was with the?
Cardiff again, same ship.
Right.
And then in October 83, October the 17th, 1983, is when I deserted and went off to France to join the Foreign Legion.
Okay, right, that's, so, 1983, you went down to the Falklands again, did you get on shore or?
Yeah, we was allowed.
Where were you at?
Port Stanley.
Oh, you were actually at Port Stanley?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the other, what's the mooring up by Mount Pleasant?
The Ajax Bay. There's a, they had Ajax Bay. The only place we went was Ajax Bay in Port Stanley.
Right. And did you got ashore?
I did one, we had 2 days there. One day I was shore patrol. Mm. And the second day went there, and by the time the boat got alongside, the bars were closed anyway. So I went for a cup of tea and a bun at the mission to seamen. And then went back to the ship because it was depressing. It was a hole. And that was it. 2 days there. And then we sailed from there. Headed back north again. We stopped off at Martinique for 6 days.
That was quite nice.
Oh, in fact, at first it was Trinidad and Tobago for 2 days. Mm. And then Martinique for 6 days.
Right.
And then back to Portsmouth.
Where did you desert from?
Portsmouth Harbour. Off the Cardiff.
When you docked, you deserted?
No, I was there. Well, it would be in October time.
Sorry?
It would be October.
Right, so you'd spent a... Yeah, okay. Why did you decide to desert?
Well, what it was, we had, when we come back from the Falklands in 82, there'd never been any problems on the ship. Now, I said that earlier on, a lot of the blokes were due to leave the ship. Hmm. And what they'd done was, the captain kept them all on board. And when we got back, those lads were drafted off. And we got a lot of new ones. One in particular, his name was Daubney. Now he said, when he joined the mess deck, he took over his leading hand in charge of the mess deck. And he said, lockers, there's a thief on board, or in the mess deck. Well, there'd never been a thief before until he mentioned it. And every time money went missing, the blame always pointed at this one character. Anyway, I accused him of being a thief to the Master of Arms. So the Master of Arms had to...
Investigate
and inform him that I've accused him of being a thief, and the captain and the first lieutenant that I accused Daubney of being a thief. So he says, well, who else agrees with you? And I said, well, most of the lads in the mess deck think he's a tea leaf. So I went to the mess deck with the Master of Arms. Daubney wasn't there. And the Master of Arms says, right, Abelsman Foster thinks Daubney's a thief. Who agrees with him? And it was like instant silence. And I thought, well, cheers, lads. You know, I mean, all this time you've been seen as a thief. So he was going to take me to court for slander, false accusations, you name it. And then I thought, well, the hell with this. And I was up in Cardiff. Merthyr Tydfil in Wales with a mate of mine. It was the weekend. And we're in the bar at the night time, and Barry, who was the owner of the bar, rugby club bar, he says, when are you coming back up again? I says, oh, not for a while. I want to join the Foreign Legion. Then he says, oh, that's a good one. Hey, lads, he's going to go and join the Foreign Legion. Everybody had a good laugh. And when I woke up on the Sunday morning, I was sober. I was thinking, well, why not? I've thought about it for a while.
Why did you say for? Oh, you've been thinking about it for a
while. Yeah, I've been in the Legion for a while, thinking about it a lot. And I thought, the hell with it. And on the Monday morning, I was on the jetty working. And the captain came up, and I was always called George in the Navy because I was a Geordie. And the captain says, all right, George, everything okay? And I says, yes, sir. He says, what are you doing tonight? Going ashore to get drunk? I says, no, sir, I'm off to join the Foreign Legion. And he says, well, send us a postcard. I says, yeah, we'll do, sir. So, well, he had no reason to moan about it when I did actually go and join the Foreign Legion that night, because that night I got the ferry from Portsmouth and headed over to St. Malo.
As you do, yeah. And what, okay. And it was this atmosphere on board the ship that made you...
Well, yeah, I mean, I was getting threatened to get taken to court and sued because I had no backing. Nobody would... won it. They would have won the court case.
And what had happened to... How long had that been going on?
Well, this is only about... the thieving had been going on for a long time.
Had it stopped?
The thieving hadn't stopped, no.
No. Okay. So, You decided up sticks and go.
Yeah.
So what, you got your kit and jump? You took your kit off the ship?
No, I just took the basics with us.
Took the
basics, like
yeah.
Change of clothing, whatever. Because I was told, I'd read about them in the Legion.
Right.
They'll take everything off you anyway.
Right.
So I just took the bare minimum.
Had you met anybody who'd been in the Legion? Had you met anybody who'd been in the Legion?
One of the lads in the Newcastle had actually deserted just beforehand. Him and his brother, when they come off from the Falklands. The one who was on our ship was, he was a steward on board the ship. His brother was in the SBS.
HBS?
SBS.
SBS.
Yeah, and they was sent back to Britain by the Legion.
Really, during the Falklands?
No, this was after the Falklands had finished, this was.
They actually, because they had deserted from the British Army, they were sent back from the Legion?
Yeah, they sent them back from the Legion, which is not, they did not actually do that all the time.
No.
But actually, when I went to join the Legion, they did the same with a couple of blokes there.
Really?
And they kept me and another guy called Arnie Hodges. He was from 9th Squadron. And
9th Squadron?
And Engineer Potters.
Right.
All engineers.
So, you took your stuff, you got your had you got a passport?
Or? Yeah, I had a passport.
Would you normally have had a passport in the Navy, free, you hold it, would you have held it yourself?
Yeah, you keep it with you anyway.
Right. And you got the night boat?
Got the night ferry from Portsmouth to St. Malo.
And then you got off and what
happened? I got to, I'd seen in the papers in the Sun on that letters page, some kid was asking about joining the Foreign Legion. And the answer was, there's a recruiting place in Fort de Nogent in Paris. So I knew roughly where I had to go to, Paris. I got to St. Malo. From there I went to Rennes, changed trains from Rennes to Paris, which I didn't realise there's actually a Legion recruiting place in Rennes, which would have saved me a lot of bother. I went from Rennes to St. Paris, but I met this lass on the train. She was a nurse from Canada, spoke English, a French-Canadian type thing. And she did a lot of work helping us get these gendarmeries, and you know, and then they passed me on from gendarmerie to gendarmerie.
Until did I got, she try and dissuade you to from joining?
No. She was helping us out, trying to, because I told her I was wanting to go there. Then I left her at some train station, and then I made my own way from there. Got to Chateau Saint-Vance, and then I got the bus from there up to Nogent somewhere. And then I got the recruiting office, Legion recruiting office in Fort de Nogent, and they said, go away. He says, come back tomorrow. And I got there about 10 o'clock the next morning.
Where did you stay?
I just went in this old three-pit hotel for the night.
Right.
And then made my way back the following morning. First thing they did was, I went in this little waiting area by the guard room, and then Chief Corporal came up to us. I don't know what rank he was at the time. And he says, in English, he said, you want to join the Foreign Legion? I says, yes, sir. And he says, if you come in here, you don't leave for 5 years. And I says, right, fair enough. And he says, have you any information on the Foreign Legion? And I was going to say, well, I've seen March or Die 12 times, but I thought, better not, he might even be impressed with that. So I says, yeah, I've seen bits and documentaries and I've read books about it. He says, okay, 5 years, understand? And I says, 5 years. And he shook my hand and took us in. And then I went to an office, so I got, kit was taken off us, they searched through us, give it back again. And I spent about a week there in Fort de Nogent doing daft jobs like cleaning, cooking and things, in the cookhouse and whatever. In fact, I think one of the first words I probably learnt in French was poubelle, meaning dustbin. Because all I did was empty the bins into the big pig bins. And then from there, we were put on a train and sent down to Auban to the Legion headquarters to start the process.
By train, or how did that go? Bus down?
From Paris? No, it was a train.
Right.
Overnight train.
Okay, so you wind up at Aubain.
Yeah, we got there the first day. Took everything was taken off of then. Everything that belonged to her. And we never seen that again. Unless you were leaving, you didn't see it again.
But you kept a watch or something?
Yeah, if you had your watch, or your wallet, you can keep that. Oh. Photographs, but clothing-wise. I took my camera with it as well, but I was allowed to keep the camera. But I didn't, they actually put it away in a safe place so it wouldn't get taken. And then I spent 3 weeks in Aubain. Doing exams, tests, running, you know, different things.
How many people got through in the end out of that 3 weeks?
After the 3 weeks, normally every Friday is the kicking out day, the ones that they accept. And it was, you go through different stages, you have a green tab on your epaulette, means you just arrived. Yellow one means that you've been selected, And when you get the red tab, it means you're about to leave. So I was in the green stage for about 3 weeks. And I thought I was pushing my luck at this time, because I'd seen blokes in the green stage less time than me, and they was getting kicked out on the Fridays. And then when I come to this one Friday, they called out about 16 of us, and we was told to stand to one side. And then on the other side, they called out more names, and there was a good 140 of them, easily. And we thought, well, they're not going to kick all that low on a Friday. We're getting kicked out, and they've been accepted. And it was the other way around. We got the yellow stage, and they kicked out this big huge one, and I won 140 out of them, I think it was, altogether total.
So there were 156, and there were only 16 selected.
Yeah, but I mean, that was just the green stage. You had other ones who weren't put
in. So, in fact, if it was 200, you'd only get about 20 get in.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, there are as many. No, they can pick and choose.
And what sort of people were there?
Oh, you had all different types. I mean, nationality-wise, you must talk about 54 different nationalities easily. Mm. And then we were selected. We got issued with a kit. And the following next week, we were sent out to Castle Nordry to start with training. Mm. Because we were got there, the first 16 of them, about 16 away. We had to wait for the next group to come down from Castle, from Auburn, to make up our section to actually start the training.
And how long did that take?
Well, that started in November. We was due to do a Kepi march just before Christmas.
Right.
Because you can't actually use the foyer or the Legionnaires' bar until you got a Kepi. Mm. But ours was postponed until after Christmas. But Christmas Day anyway, we went in the bar. There's seven of our Brits went in the bar. And we got caught. Because it was Christmas night, they said, right, we're not going to do anything. Get out, don't go in again. Mm. So I had to go back to the room. Then 10 minutes later, back in the bar again. And we got caught a second time. And this time the chief corporal in charge of our section, he was called Sauer, big German guy. And he was also the unarmed combat instructor. And he says, right, your punishment is, you give her all a slap, which didn't really hurt, because he knew it was Christmas Day, so he gave her a little crack around the ear hole. And one bloke, all he got was threatened with by Sauer's fist. He didn't get hit at all. And it was his money that was buying all the beer, and it was his idea to go in the bar in the first place as well. So we actually got a week of cleaning the toilets up for a punishment, which worked quite well for us, because anybody who wanted to use the toilet would lock the door, and they weren't allowed to come in and use the toilets unless it was singing God Save the Queen, which none of them could, because they were all frogs or Greek or German or whatever. So they all complained that they couldn't use the toilets because they couldn't sing God Save the Queen. So we did 2 days of cleaning the toilets and was taken off that job.
So when you arrived at Castle Nordry, how many Brits were there?
Well, you had different sections that were actually doing the training start. And there was a fair amount there then.
Really? Like, yeah. How many?
Oh, I'd say there was easily about, out of all the sections, about easily 100.
100 Brits?
Yeah, we had 10 in ours alone, in our section.
Really?
You think you've got about 4 sections to a company.
Right.
And then the Brits. And then you have the corporal's courses run from there, the sergeant's course. So you had Brits on them courses as well. Easily 100 Brits there.
Really? And what other nationalities were there?
Well, in our section, we had one Greek. He was on his own. He had nobody to talk to. See, when you actually go there, you have the colonel gives you a speech when your section forms up. And he says it in French. And then you have sergeants or whatever from different nationalities who translate it. But they didn't have a Greek there, so this bloke had to just sit there, probably guessing what they were saying.
Really?
Mm. And then he actually ended up learning more English than he did French, because he tended to hang around the Brits more than anybody else.
Okay.